The sound of the Puyuma tribe on Radio Taiwan International.
Hello and welcome to Radio Taiwan International, coming to you from Taipei, Taiwan. I'm Eli Alberts. On today's Jade Bells and Bamboo Pipes with Carlson Wong, get ready to hear some angels from Beijing singing some songs. But first, Women Making Waves, presented by Caroline Gluck. This week she talks to linguistics professor Victoria Rao, who has been helping to prevent an Aboriginal language from dying out.
Welcome to Women Making Waves, a program in which I'm meeting women, breaking a few boundaries, and getting their voices heard. This week, I'm talking to a Taiwanese professor who's been helping to keep alive a fast-disappearing Aboriginal language. Victoria Rao is a professor in the Department of English at Taichung's Providence University, and she's helped to complete a grammar book and dictionary and build a digital archive to document the Yami language. It's the language spoken by the inhabitants of Orchid Island, a tiny island off the southern tip of Taiwan. First of all, tell me, how did you actually get involved in this project?
About 12 years ago, a Yami woman, Xishumakmi, in Chinese, Dong Ma Nu, contacted me and asked me if I would help her describe her grammar and teach her how to analyze her own language. That's how we got started. So I decided to apply for a National Science Council grant so I could do some social linguistic survey to get an understanding of the picture of the language situation on Orchid Island. So this Yami consultant, my friend, Xishumakmi, accompanied me to Orchid Island. I brought a group of 10 graduate students, all female, with me to do a preliminary survey of the social linguistic situation. That's how we got started.
And what intrigued you about the project? Why did you decide it was something that you wanted to get involved with? Because you're not Aboriginal or even from Orchid Island yourself.
Mm-hmm. Because when I was a graduate student at Cornell, I studied Aboriginal languages in Taiwan. I actually studied Austronesian linguistics with Professor John Wolf, and I had some background in Indonesian and Tagalog, and finally I wrote a thesis in Atayal, another Taiwanese Aboriginal language. I did a textbook with Professor John Wolf when I was a graduate student on Tagalog. So I have background in Philippine languages. So when I came back to Taiwan, when this Yami friend contacted me in a conference, she was very impressed by my work, and she thought that I might be a suitable person to help her. That's how we got to know each other, and we committed ourselves to this type of project. And ever since then, we just have worked together because our work habits are very similar, so we have kept working.
It sounds like it was quite a tough project, because the Yami language I've read is oral. It doesn't actually have letters. It lacks a script. Mm-hmm. So how did you find a solution to that challenge?
Well, in fact, the so-called oral languages in many Aboriginal villages have been translated into New Testaments, into the Bible. So many missionaries designed orthography for these Aboriginal languages. And as a linguist, we learned principles in phonetics and phonology. So it's really not a difficult task for us to transcribe an oral language into IPA system. It's a Roman alphabet system. But since those missionaries have already laid the foundation for these communities, they already have their own Bibles, and they also have taught these people to to read their own languages, it's not really difficult for us as linguists to continue on this foundation to do further, more refined work in language analysis and developing textbooks.
The Yami people in Taiwan are one of the smallest Aboriginal groups. I'm wondering how many people today actually speak the language, because I understand that many young people can't actually speak their native tongue.
Mm-hmm. Although the official figure is about less than 4,000 speakers of Yami, in fact, people under 50 years old have various degrees of proficiency, especially those who are under 30 really do not have very good language proficiency. So there's only one village on Orchid Island, which is Yiralalai in Chinese Langdao, where teenagers still speak their ethnic language. Other villages, the rest of the five villages, really do not have very good ability in Yami anymore.
It really is a language that is endangered. It's in danger of dying out.
Right, exactly. Because young people are no longer speaking the language, like I said, except for the group, the only village that still use their language in daily life. The rest of the villages there, especially when they speak to children, they already use Mandarin. Even grandparents use Mandarin to their grandchildren. So this tells us that intergeneration transmission is no longer there.
So how much difference do you think your project will make in helping to revive the language?
I think our work is to give impetus to the local people, to empower the local community to value their own language, because we provide resources, our e-learning program and our detailed grammar description and our textbooks can provide very rich data and resources. So if they want to pick up and follow up, and if they want to make an effort to maintain their language, at least they have resources.
You're listening to Women Making Waves, and I'm talking to linguistics professor Victoria Rao. The Yami language, as you mentioned earlier, is part of what's known as the Austronesian language family, the biggest in the world. I'm wondering, is it just the Yami dialect that is in danger of disappearing, or are there many other languages that face the same problem?
In fact, in Taiwan, all Austronesian languages are in danger. But there's different degree of endangerment. If you look at those plain languages, for example, Thao, T-H-A-O, and Bazih, P-A-Z-I-H. Those two languages, the so-called plain groups spoken in Puli, there are very few speakers left. However, for the case of Bazih, for example, according to Professor Paul Lee from Academia Sinica, from his description, he said there's only one competent, capable speaker who can provide a good text for him. But this particular group recently has become very aware of their language endangerment, and they have formed a group. At least there are 8 Bazih speakers who are teaching their teenagers or teaching other people who are interested in the language in Sunday school. So this is an effort that we see that a very endangered language is becoming aware of the situation of their language and is trying to do something.
Now, just earlier this month, you also organized an international conference at your university,
yes,
focusing on efforts to document and preserve endangered Austronesian languages, looking at ways how to revitalize them. What were your main conclusions in terms of what practical efforts could be taken up?
The best way is to recruit Aboriginal language speakers or endangered language speakers who are interested to be trained to do language documentation so that they can continue with the work. So what we do as academics are really trying to train and empower people to do capacity building and to provide resources. The key is actually in the hand of those endangered communities, because unless they are willing to join us, in fact, we provide many opportunities. However, sometimes because of circumstances, maybe education or some kind of limitation, they couldn't join us in the project. So they are not trained to do the work. Otherwise, if they can become part of the project, they are the keys for their own language maintenance and revitalization.
And why is it so important for communities, however small, to keep those languages alive?
Because we like to see linguistic diversity and cultural diversity in the world. This is a human asset, and we like to preserve all these different cultures and languages. We think they are all very valuable, and we shouldn't suppress those minority groups because it's unavoidable that dominant languages sometimes tend to push those minority languages away, because even their own minority communities will think that their languages are worth nothing and they need to learn dominant languages. As a result, all the diversity and the creativity are diminishing, so we need to preserve all cultures because they are equally valuable.
And here in Taiwan, the government is finalizing a national language development bill which will recognize all the native tongues here in Taiwan, particularly Aboriginal ones. How important will that be?
I think language planning and language policy will have a very positive impact on people's self-confidence. As soon as these Aboriginal languages are recognized as the so-called national languages, they will feel that their languages are important. That will certainly give them interest and desire to maintain their languages. So I think this really has the so-called symbolic value, and it will energize their community and empower their community.
Are you optimistic about the future of the native tongues of Taiwan's indigenous peoples?
Well, nothing is impossible if people are willing to make an effort to reverse their language vitality. So I'm optimistic as long as the Aboriginal communities are optimistic about their own languages.
Professor Rao, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
I am strong. I am invincible.
Listening to Radio Taiwan International. Check out our website at english.rti.org.tw.
Next, Jade Bells and Bamboo Pipes with Carlson Wong.
Hello and welcome to this week's Jade Bells and Bamboo Pipes, brought to you by Radio Taiwan International. I'm Carlson Wong. On today's show, we're listening to music by Beijing Angelic Choir. And to start off, we'll listen to A Rainy Day. This is a very, very popular piece of Hakka music. And it first starts with the sound of the rain, so it's not distortion or interference whatsoever. So let's sit back, relax, and enjoy this music, A Rainy Day.
Thank you.
a popular piece of Hakka music, A Rainy Day, 下雨天, or in Hakka, it's pronounced as 落水天. The Hakka people make up about 20 to 30% of the population here in Taiwan, according to the statistics. And of course, there is a cultural diversity here in Taiwan where people respect different ethnicities and different groups. We have 12 indigenous groups here in Taiwan, and we have the Minnan people or the Holo Taiwanese, and we also have Hakka people. And all these languages are very, very different. In Mandarin Chinese, a rainy day would be 下雨天, but in Holo Taiwanese, it would be 落雨天. And in Hakka, the music that you just heard is pronounced as 落水天. Interesting, isn't it? So now we'll listen to a piece of music from one of the indigenous tribes here in Taiwan. This is from the Shao tribe, and this music is entitled The Celebration of the Tribal Harvest Festival.
Oh, 向全世界传开永恒的关怀，来自台湾之音 RTI。
RTI Radio Taiwan International. You're listening to Jade Bells and Bamboo Pipes, brought to you by Radio Taiwan International. I'm Carlson Wong in our studio in Taipei right now, and today we featuremusic by Beijing Angelic Choir. And this album that we feature today represents a musical celebration of people from different regions of China and Taiwan. And if you just happen to join us right now, actually, we have played two pieces of music from Taiwan. The first piece is from the Hakka people, and the second piece is from one of the indigenous tribes here in Taiwan.And next, we have for you a very special piece of music, which I think you're familiar with. I'm not going to tell you the name of the music. This is a very popular music, both in Taiwan and China. And originally, it is from Hebei province. And for your information, we have played this music quite often on our show, so you might want to take a guess. Let's sit back, relax, and enjoy this music.Molihua, the jasmine flower. Did you guess it right? I'm sure you did. So give yourself a big round of applause. Everyone can use some kind of encouragement. So do the children who live up in the mountains here in Taiwan. By the meaning of children from the mountain, actually, we refer to the Aboriginal children who live up in the mountains. So coming up, listen to Children from the Mountain. Children from the Mountain, 山上的孩子, performed by the Beijing Angelic Choir. This excellent children choir, composed of the elites from several local choirs in Beijing, is distinguished with their sweet voices and trained skills. All the members of the choir sing with one voice, which provides a fantastic world of timeless harmony.
Bye.
was Wedding from the Honey Tribe of Yunnan Province, China, and that will also bring us to the end of today's Jade Bells and Bamboo Pipes, brought to you by Radio Taiwan International. Thank you for listening. For comments and suggestions, please write to P.O. Box 24-38 Taipei, Taiwan, and our email address is rti@rti.org.tw. I'll leave you with Lady Ashima. I'm Carlson Wong. Once again, thank you for listening. See you next week. Until then, goodbye.
Thank you for listening. I'm Eli Alberts for Radio Taiwan International.
You've been listening to Radio Taiwan International, broadcasting from Taipei, Taiwan, the Republic of China. Visit us online at english.rti.org.tw. Our 60-minute English language program can be heard every day at the following times and frequencies. In Australia, New Zealand, and Indonesia, from 1100 to 1200 UTC on 11715 kHz. In China, from 1600 to 1700 UTC on 15515 kHz and on 9785 kHz. In Europe, from 1800 to 1900 UTC on 3965 kHz, from 2200 to 2300 UTC on 15600 kHz, and via DRM from 1200 to 1300 UTC on 9850 kHz. In North America, from 0200 to 0300 UTC on 9680 and 5950 kHz, from 0300 to 0400 UTC, and from 0700 to 0800 UTC on 5950 kHz. In the Philippines, from 0100 to 0200 UTC on 11875 kHz, and from 1100 to 1200 UTC on 11715 kHz. In South Africa, from 1700 to 1800 UTC on 15690 kHz. In South America, from 0300 to 0400 UTC on 15215 kHz. In South Asia, from 1600 to 1700 UTC on 15515 kHz. And in Southeast Asia, from 0300 to 0400 UTC on 15320 kHz, from 1100 to 1200 UTC on 7445 kHz, and from 1400 to 1500 UTC on 15265 kHz. Thank you once again for listening to Radio Taiwan International.